This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Every day, millions of school children are sent packing off to school, hopefully to learn. Most of them will eat lunch in the school cafeteria, and of those children, most will eat what the cafeteria is serving up that day. School lunches certainly don't rank up there with the dining experience at the Ritz, but they should be healthy and nutritious. Are they? Do you know what your child is being served? How does your child's school cafeteria rank? The Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit dedicated to promoting preventive medicine, especially better nutrition, sends out a yearly report card to help in that effort. Susan Levin, a registered dietitian, is Director of Nutrition Education at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and she joins us for the hour from Washington, D.C. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Ron Jones is a culinary specialist and executive chef for Greenville County Schools in Greenville, South Carolina. He is a Johnson & Wales graduate who recently won the Physicians Committee Award for serving healthy, low-fat, vegetarian lunch options to 11 schools in Greenville County. Thanks for driving all the way to Charlotte this morning to be with us on the program.
My pleasure, Mike.
You graduate from Johnson & Wales here or Johnson & Wales elsewhere?
Providence, Rhode Island.
Providence, the mother campus.
That's it.
Okay. We also invited anyone and everyone responsible for preparing school lunches at CMS, and no one was available to be with us today. I take it that this is just one area of interest, school lunches, for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Correct, Susan?
That's right. We focus on trying to improve nutrition habits among all people, and we use evidence-based science to support our advocacy for plant-based diets. But certainly getting change to happen within a school system and among young people is a great way to ensure that as we age, we are adopting better habits.
But this isn't, I was going to say, lunches are food. Isn't medicine. So why is the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine involved? But I think you see it differently, don't you? Lunches are, food is medicine. In a way.
Oh, absolutely. And this organization was founded 25 years ago on the notion that most physicians didn't consider nutrition when speaking or consulting with patients about why they had a heart attack or why they have type 2 diabetes. And the founder, Dr. Neil Barnard, thought, this is crazy. We should be talking about nutrition. We should be preventing this from happening in the first place. So, yeah, I think you could think of food as medicine. Let thy food be thy medicine. But it's certainly a way to prevent ever having to be on pharmaceutical drugs, we believe. So that's why we promote this way of eating.
You spend a lot of your time writing, I'm told, about the connection between plant-based diets and a reduced risk of chronic diseases. What do plant-based diets do for us? What kinds of chronic diseases might they either prevent or not lead us toward?
Yeah, well, you know, in the early 90s, a doctor named Dr. Dean Ornish did a landmark study that showed you could not only prevent cardiovascular disease, the number one killer by far of people in Western countries, and the U.S. is no different. He showed that you could reverse the damage done to your arteries by improving your diet, by eating a very low-fat, plant-based diet. And this was revolutionary, reversing plaque in your arteries. No one thought you could do that, and certainly not with diet. And since then, there have been plenty of studies to show the same kinds of effects with plant-based diets, whether it be cleaning out your arteries or cleaning out the fat out of your cells so that your insulin can do the work that people with type 2 diabetes, that's where that problem lies for those people with that disease, and in terms of helping to prevent cancer. So right there you have heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and cancer, three of the biggest killers, or at least three of the biggest diseases with which most of us live with. And that's, it doesn't have to be that way. We could change those statistics with a diet. We can not only prevent it, but we can reverse those diseases as well.
Ron Jones, you won your, I think it's the Golden Carrot Award from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, in part because of what you're doing with vegetarian meal items in the Greenville County school system in South Carolina. What led you to pursue that line of food items?
Well, I'll step way back in a mile high here so you can get the full picture. Our superintendent of schools, Dr. Penny Fisher, 3 or 4 years ago, was quite aware of some of the issues with school food and looking at some federal laws and federal changes coming down the road. So she was opening a new elementary school, A.J. Wittenberg Elementary School of Engineering. And
Elementary School of Engineering?
Yes, sir. It's a math and science-based school. It's a wonderful, wonderful school in downtown, right smack downtown Greenville.
Okay.
And they declared that that was going to not only be a science and math school, but it's going to be a healthy school. And she wanted those school menus to look radically different. So I came on board with Greenville County Schools, and we piloted there for 1 year, which was a wonderful opportunity to see what kids would take, what they would eat, and what they wouldn't eat. And we, going into that opening, put together some pretty specific nutritional goals. And one of the nutritional goals that was first and foremost was that we wanted to stay away from processed foods, which school food service is, quite rich in. And we also wanted to start to lean on some vegetarian offerings. The vegetarian offerings are important to us nutritionally because, they drop fat and saturated fat and increase fiber and vitamins and minerals, and they also can allow us to drop our food costs if they're done properly. So we have a gain financially, and we also have a gain nutritionally. So, we had some people who thought these children would not eat vegetarian-based products, and we pretty much proved them wrong. The younger kids, the K-4, K-5 kids, are pretty accepting and trusting of us. And when I go out there in my chef's coat and say, hey, let's try this tofu and see how it tastes, they trust me and they taste it, and they have no preconceived notions of what that might be, and they like it. So that's...
Of course, tofu can take on the flavor of what's around it, right?
Correct, yes.
So what do you put around it?
We basically press it to express the moisture, and then we would use an Asian marinade and grill it. The interesting thing is that the school lunch program doesn't allow tofu as a protein. So we couldn't credit that as a school meal, but we certainly did some testing to see if they would eat it.
It's clearly a protein. Why isn't it allowed to be listed as such?
New changes in the law. Going forward, it will be allowed, but last year it was not allowed.
Now, you used the term processed food, and I was thinking about this last night because I've heard about processed foods for years, and we're hearing that bacon is not good for you because it's a processed food. And it suddenly dawned on me, you don't know what processed food means, meaning me. What technically define a processed food? Because you brought it up.
Thanks.
Or Susan, you can jump in here.
No, go ahead, Jeff.
Help,
Susan.
That's
a whole other show.
Yeah, that is a whole other show. When we're looking at processed foods, we're looking at foods that are pretty far away from their natural state. And I'll give you an example. Chicken nuggets, for instance, are a heavily processed food. They've got added sodium, added chemicals, added fats. We would just as soon serve a student 2 ounces of a chicken leg on the bone. Mm-hmm. Than 2 ounces of something that has all those extra chemicals, fat, and ingredients that weren't naturally in the chicken.
We are experiencing an obesity epidemic in this country and a rise in diseases that are normally have been traditionally only been contracted by people who are older, like diabetes. And kids are getting these now at very young ages. How much of what is being served in school cafeterias around the country, Susan, is adding to that problem?
Well, I think it's adding to it tremendously. You have to think that this is the place, schools, where kids are learning for the first time about nutrition, about their own health, and then they're going into a cafeteria, usually not like the one that Chef Ron is describing, and seeing these foods, and you can imagine the mixed messages, the confusion, and you can see why, as adolescents, teenagers, and adults, we have no idea what it means to eat a healthful diet. So I think that that perpetuates the problem. And certainly there was a study recently in the American Heart Journal that found a direct correlation between healthy school nutrition programs and improved physical fitness performance. So that tells you right there that, of course, the food that you're served in the school plays a role in the health of that child, the well-being, not to mention, obviously, the mental well-being and performance in school. So it's a great place to for the foundation of healthful eating habits, and I think we are completely missing the boat. For most schools, we're just missing the boat with what we're offering in the school lunch line.
Ron.
Yeah, Susan, thank you. And Mike, I wanted to just reiterate that in Greenville County Schools, we are looking at the cafeteria as not a cafeteria. It's a nutrition learning lab. It's a place where we teach students to make healthy choices and about the food system.
It strikes me that if you're doing that, you're also fighting years of family tradition in many cases. Some kids eat the way they're not exposed to the kind of food that you're giving them in these situations because they don't get it at home.
Right.
So when you open their eyes to the other possibilities, is it like a classroom to them? Do they consider it like opening a textbook and reading about something they didn't know about? Or do they fight you on it? Because what they really want is the hamburger and French fries.
Well, you know, we run a program out of Texas in our schools called the CATCH program, which is a coordinated approach to child health. And it comes in four components. It's catch in the classroom, catch in the phys ed, catch at home, and catch in the cafeteria. Mm-hmm. But we bathe these kids in the language of healthy food, and we label our food go food, slow food, and woe food. And we label everything with a stoplight. And if it's got a green stoplight on it, that means go, kids, go. And you can eat all that food with, you know, minimal detrimental effects on your body. In fact, it'll probably help your body.
So what would be in the go food category?
Of course, fruits and vegetables are primarily in that go food category, lean proteins.
I believe that your definition of slow food is not going to be the same as the definition we've been using on this program over the years. So what is your definition of slow food?
Slow foods are those foods that students should be or families should be looking at in moderation and not necessarily detrimental to your health. But
So that would be what?
For instance, if we are doing a pasta dish on the line and we've got some dark chicken meat in there, with the fat in the dark chicken meat, we may call that a slow food.
Okay. And no food would mean what?
It's called a woe food. And, woe food is basically anything that is just basically unhealthy, whether it's high in sugar or high in fat. And we serve very, very little of that. Everything is labeled, so the students are constantly hit with the message. And we send materials home to parents, and, what we are expecting is that kids are going home and talking about go food, slow food, and woe food. The message is going home.
Ron Jones is a culinary specialist and the executive chef with the Greenville County Schools in Greenville, South Carolina. Susan Levin is the director of nutrition education for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. I want to stress that we did invite somebody from CMS to join us, and nobody could make it part of their schedule today. But we sent out one of our producers, Aaron Sutton, who helps write the WFA Eats food blog at wfaeats.org. And if you're like me and have not been in a school cafeteria in a long time, you can go to that blog and take a look at what was being served for lunch yesterday. There are lots of photographs out there. And I don't know which school they were at, but you can take a look at that right now as we talk. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Duke University's Master of Management in Clinical Informatics one-year program for working professionals. Accepting applications for August start. Details at fuqua.duke.edu/mmci. Well, the race for president is on, and in North Carolina, so is the race for governor. There are also a few congressional seats up for grabs. And then there's Amendment 1, also known as the Marriage Amendment. No shortage of political things to talk about, and so we invite WFAE's party line blocker, Michael Bitzer, to join us tomorrow. Dr. Michael Bitzer at 9 to give us a political update. And by the way, speaking of blogs, our food blog, WFA Eats, recently visited a school in CMS to find out what's for lunch. You can view the photo blog that takes you inside the cafeteria and into the kitchen. And while you're there, you can also see the monthly menu for CMS meals. It's at WFAEats.org.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Pope's visit to Cuba highlights its struggles for economic, social, and political change, the implications for the U.S. and Latin America.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, on 90.7 WFAE, your NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about school lunches today with Susan Levin, who is with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and Ron Jones, who is the executive chef of the Greenville County, South Carolina school system. I'm looking at a picture of one lunch yesterday served at one of the schools that is featured on our WFAEats.org blog. And it's a green tray. In the center of the tray are a bunch of chicken nuggets. And then there are three ice creams and a juice box, and that was lunch. Now, that means that's not what was necessarily all that was being served, but that's what that child chose to eat. Susan, Ron, help me here. If the child has choices, you can't make them eat the right things, can you?
Well, I'll jump in first, if that's okay. This is why we are so fond of Chef Ron and his program and other schools who not only give healthful options to kids, obviously that's the first step, give them a choice, give them at least one healthy thing on the menu to choose. But if you put a tofu dish in front of a 8-year-old and chicken nuggets and french fries and say, pick one, I mean, which one do you think they're going to probably pick? That's why incentive programs are very important, especially with young kids who might not be able to fathom how food plays a role once it's inside their bodies. So the incentive programs are fundamental, educational programs, gardening programs, farm to school, anything that engages kids to understand that choosing certain foods, there's a reason for it. It can be fun. It can be interesting. So that's why we give golden carrots, because we want these schools to go above and beyond just the federal regulation.
You're on the front lines of all this. So how do you do it?
I want to go ahead and echo Susan's sentiments. The closer that we get these kids to the food supply, if they can get out to a community garden or a school garden or a home garden, it's so important that they learn that food doesn't come through a car window or it doesn't come from a prepared box in a mega chain store. And we're seeing great response from the children in Greenville County schools with our gardens. It has a major impact. Unfortunately, we can't serve that food grown in our gardens in the cafeteria yet. That's still a food safety issue and against the rules. But that doesn't say that we can't take the food from the gardens and go to the kitchens and go to the classrooms and cook with the students, which is what we've been doing.
Hmm.
And that's really, really important.
So if they grow the spinach, they're liable to taste it.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the little girls, a first or second grader at A.J. Wittenberg School, last year when they were planting, her plant was Swiss chard. And so I asked her, have you ever had Swiss chard before? And she said, yeah. She said, I planted it in the garden, and I went home that night, and my mother bought it for me. So the first time that she had ever experienced Swiss chard was because she planted it. She hadn't even seen it sprout yet and was already introducing it into her diet.
The government
say that that's very common. It's not only – and it brings into the holistic picture of kids' health and who's responsible. When a kid grows something, they see it prepared, they go home and they say, Mom, Dad, buy me some Swiss chard. Can you imagine that coming out of a child's mouth? And then being in the grocery store and it's like, sure, I'll buy you some, and it takes it home and engages the parents. And it's really important. You have to have the parents' involvement as well.
The government used to buy a lot of surplus cheese and then make that available to school lunch programs around the country. Is that still going on?
Yes, sir.
Are there more cheesy dishes on lunch menus around the country as a result of that cheese being available at a relatively low price to schools?
Well, you know, the USDA food program is a huge part of what we do in school lunch, and you know, a ballpark number is about 22 cents per day per child comes in USDA commodity foods. And in Greenville County schools, we are looking at what we can do to bring in the cleanest label products. So cheese for us is a pretty clean label product. We're very happy to bring in cheese. We do a baked macaroni and cheese with broccoli dish as one of our vegetarian offerings. And the protein comes from the cheese. We need the cheese.
But doesn't fat come from the cheese?
Yes, it does. We use a reduced fat, reduced sodium cheese.
Okay.
But, you know, still we have to get that 2 ounces of protein in the diet every day, and that's either going to come from beans or from cheese.
According to your organization, Susan, the National School Lunch Program serves 30.5 million lunches a day at a cost of $8.7 billion a year and receives cash subsidies in commodity foods, which Ron just mentioned, from the U.S. Department of Agriculture for each meal served. What constitutes a commodity food?
Well, it's a great question, but it's usually a list that the USDA puts out, and that is the list that schools or contractors with schools get to choose from. So they're a little less expensive, and they're usually at their core like a one-ingredient list, like beef or a type of beef or chicken or beans or cheese, and those are your commodity foods from which you get to choose. It's quite an extensive list, actually, and it's not all bad. They do have things like grains and beans and fruits on those lists.
On the one hand, on the other hand, your organization has characterized the commodity food program as a long-standing barrier to schools serving more healthful meals. How so?
Well, it's kind of what has come up a couple of times in this conversation, which is there's all sorts of rules and regulations that make it so complicated. As you kind of questioned, well, what do you mean tofu isn't a protein? It's obviously almost nothing but protein. There's so many rules that make it very hard when you put the tray together that you're abiding by these particular rules. So if, for example, tofu isn't and yes, soy is becoming easier to put on your lunch tray. But let's say if you can't put tofu on your lunch tray because it's not considered a protein, but why? Well, these protein regulations are set so high that it just makes it very hard not to choose something that's like meat or cheese to qualify as a protein. And you have to pick them. You have to have a milk on your tray in order to get reimbursed for these foods, milk being another commodity food. Which there's just a lot of systems in place that support agriculture but don't necessarily support health.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Does the USDA, who's responsible for doing this, are they in the business of supporting farmers, or are they in the business of, do they consider the health implications of some of the things that they make available to schools or require schools to use?
Well, million-dollar question. But the USDA was established to support farmers, and that is their primary goal. And you know, this is not Farmer Fred anymore. These are huge corporations that are being subsidized and are being supported by our tax dollars, by the USDA. So their first and foremost, as far as I could tell, priority is with these companies. And this is how you get things like pink slime, quote-unquote, being purchased and put into the school system. It's not because they think, hey, that's a really great choice for kids. That's going to really get us to our goals of reducing obesity and reversing the health crisis in this country. No, it's about, oh, you need to sell every last scrap of meat and put it into some form, which ends up being called pink slime, and fine, we'll buy that up and we'll dump it in schools. It's incredible. And when the swine flu epidemic was on every front page of the newspapers, and people decided, well, I'm not going to eat pork anymore because I don't want to get swine flu, even though scientifically you can't really get swine flu from eating pork, people didn't want to eat it. So guess what they did for the pork farmers? The USDA said, well, we'll buy all that pork that people aren't eating and we'll dump it into schools and make the kids eat it. So these are not health decisions. These are financial decisions. And even though, yes, the USDA is now charged with coming up with the dietary guidelines and health guidelines, it's impossible to separate out that first priority.
They're serving two masters. You're telling me that they're serving two masters.
And it cannot be done.
Yeah.
And it's not being done.
Ron, you said that you're saving money in some cases on doing. How do you get around using all the things that the USDA food program makes available to school systems? How do you interface with
them? Well, let's be real. I mean, the USDA does offer us some products that are perfectly acceptable and healthy, and we try to capitalize on as many of those as we can. You know, your comment about us saving money, I don't want to give school districts across the area the impression that running these kind of menus is going to save them money.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the middle of a huge training program where we're bringing all of our cafeteria workers over time to the local community college at Greenville Tech, Culinary Institute of the Carolinas, and exposing them to 40 hours of hands-on training so they can go back and cook. And that's a very expensive proposition.
Right.
Also, when we roll these menus out into schools, the first 3 months of our operations are extremely expensive because our staff is now doing something they haven't done in years. The waste goes up, the labor cost goes up.
What they haven't done in years, meaning cook?
Cooking from scratch.
Cooking from scratch.
Yeah, and that's not to say that they don't do some of it, but I mean, yes. Now they're going back to almost all of it.
Right.
So for me to say that we would be saving money would be disingenuous.
When you roll these I know you talked about rolling this out at a very specific school in the system. Have you rolled it out in various different forms in all the schools in the systems?
Yes, Mike. We rolled it out to 10 more schools this year, so we have 11 schools on our Culinary Creations menu.
And as you roll it out and school kids are exposed to different things than they've seen on the school lunch line in the past, what is the reaction? Do they take to it? Do you have to make cafeteria visits and convince them to try this, that, or the other thing? Or do they simply say, well, I'll give that a shot?
They're pretty accepting of it. I mean, the school population in general is excited about the change.
Why?
You know, because I think the message is that we're doing something for you. You know, this is for you. We've got one of our schools in a neighborhood that is about 90-some-odd% free and reduced meals, and you know, one of the parents had said to the principal, why are you doing this to our children? And he said, no, we're doing this for your children. And we're feeding a ton of kids there on a daily basis.
I understand that sometimes veggie burgers are on the menu there, baked penne, and vegetation stations are popular among your students. So tell me about baked penne. Where does that fall in the mix? Is it just noodles and sauce, or is it noodles and sauce and beef? What is it?
We have a heavy emphasis on whole grains, so whenever we offer pastas on the menu, it'll be a whole grain pasta. That's with marinara sauce and enough cheese to accommodate the protein requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, you know, season it up with some Italian seasoning, and, you know, obviously kids are going to eat that.
Because it's like pizza.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Sure.
When they are presented a veggie burger as opposed to a hamburger, do they notice the difference? Do they care about the difference?
Well, what we do is we'll generally serve a veggie burger or a hamburger. The students will have their choice.
And if they're side by side, mm-hmm, on the lunch line, how many hamburgers do you sell versus veggie burgers?
If they're side by side and you don't have a trained, engaged staff and you let the children walk through the line, they're going to take that burger 99% of the time.
So is the cafeteria staff actively pushing them toward the veggie burger?
Yeah, and I wouldn't say pushing. I would say that, you know, we're creating a culture in our schools where teachers are modeling these behaviors. They're eating a lot more school lunch than they were in the past. Staff is eating a lot more of these lunches. And what we're saying to them is, have you tried the veggie burger? We'll sample it. We'll put it in a 2-ounce filet cup and send it through the line as kids are going through the line. And when they get to the point, they'll consider it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we'll go on a veggie burger. if we do 200 meals and we serve 15 to 20 veggie burgers a day, we'd be happy with that.
What is a vegetation station?
Vegetation station is basically a salad bar. So when the students come through the lunch line every day, they have a choice of either the vegetable of the day, which could be, you know, broccoli or lima beans or corn, or the vegetation station. The salad bar would be their vegetable for the day. They can also opt to use vegetation station as an entree. So we serve soup, homemade soup on the menu with whole grain bread and protein on the salad bar, which makes it a reimbursable offering for lunch.
The Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, which I'm going to start referring to now as PCRM because it's just shorter, has ranked the worst five meals being served at lunch in cafeterias around the country. The worst meal on the list is beef and cheese nachos, followed at number two by meatloaf and potatoes. This really shocked me, I got to tell you. Cheeseburgers came in third. Cheese sandwiches, including cheese quesadilla, came in fourth. And rounding out the worst five, at number five, pepperoni pizza. Let's begin with meatloaf and potatoes. What's wrong with that, Susan?
Well, I mean, again, if you break down the nutritional content of these meals, you're going to see a lot of fat, a lot of saturated fat or quote-unquote bad fat, a lot of times excess sodium, cholesterol, and very little, if any, fiber. So these are the opposites of what we want to see kids eating, are these what we call energy-dense or calorie-dense foods, but very nutrient-poor, so not a lot of vitamins, minerals, and phytochemicals.
How did beef and cheese nachos ever make it to the entree list? I mean, to me, that's a very fatty appetizer at a family restaurant.
Right. Because, I mean, again, the USDA rules and regulations are outdated, although there have been some recent changes. For example, the calorie limits have been lowered, meaning there used to be a calorie minimum requirement that was rather high, and they've decided that can be lowered somewhat. So you would find school cafeteria or school lunch service directors putting cookies on kids' trays, because if it were an apple instead, there wouldn't be enough calories, which is just heartbreaking. And you can see how nonsensical it is. And things like, we needed a protein, we needed more protein on there, so we had to add the cheese, which is crazy because no child in our school system or in this country is deficient in protein of all things. We get way more protein than we even need. Why not focus on something fiber?
Is that because the school lunch program began in the middle 1940s, right after the war, and perhaps back then school children did not get a lot of protein in their diet? We weren't very wealthy back then. It was after the war and things were getting back together again. Is that why?
Yes, but I would argue even then we got enough protein. But right. I think that that's right. It was a completely different set of circumstances. And now what you have for the most part are kids who get over, we get too many calories. We might not be getting a lot of the good nutrients that we need, vitamins, minerals, and phytochemicals and fiber, but we are over nurtured in the sense of calories, fat, cholesterol, and sodium. So we need to really think about the situation we find ourselves in now with 12.5 million kids in the U.S. who are obese, and then one out of three of them who are born are going to develop diabetes at some point in his or her life. I mean, these are statistics that can be reversed.
And we have to take a break. We're coming right back with more in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and American Water Resources. This month, a notice will be mailed to homeowners regarding water and sewer line maintenance. These lines are the property owner's responsibility. Details at awrusa.com/news. And Blumenthal Performing Arts presents an evening with Martin Short. The hilarious live show features songs, videos, and sketches from the famed comedian. That's Saturday night in Knight Theater. Tickets at 704-372-1000. The Pope's visit to Cuba highlights its struggles for economic, social, and political change. Diane Rehm and her guests talk about life in Cuba today and the implications for the U.S. and for Latin America in the 10 o'clock hour. If you'd like to join our conversation about school lunches, now's the time. 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE or WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
The ballots in North Carolina's May primary will include a proposed amendment to the state constitution.
Marriage between one man and one woman is the only domestic legal union that shall be valid or recognized in this state. This section does not...
WFAE will host a public conversation on defining marriage Thursday evening, March 29th at Spirit Square. You're invited to attend and share your views. Details and RSVP at WFAE.org.
We're talking about school lunches today on Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Susan Levin is a registered dietitian and director of nutrition education for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, PCRM for short. Ron Jones is a culinary specialist, executive chef, and winner of the Golden Carrot Award from that organization for his groundbreaking vegetarian menu at the Greenville County Schools in Greenville, South Carolina. We invited people from CMS to join us, and the three top people were unavailable today to be with us. And we were talking about the five worst lunches or five worst meals around the country that PCRM has identified. You know, kids love pizza, and I recall pizza being a treat when it was served, but it was only served possibly once a month when I was in school, and we had hamburgers and french fries maybe once a month. I don't remember what else was on the menu, but have we become progressively more unhealthy over time, or have things pretty much stayed the same in terms of what's being served?
Susan, you want to take?
I would say it's gotten worse. I think as our culture has become a little bit more fast food oriented, and it's not a treat. I mean, going to fast food is now considered, you know, it's cheaper than going to the grocery store for certain things, and it's what kids are used to, and somehow school lunches they follow that lead. They present foods that look exactly like what you would get at an unhealthy fast food restaurant.
Let me share the five healthful options that PCRM has identified. Vegetarian chili is listed as the healthiest option, followed by veggie burgers, beans and rice, hummus with pita, and whole grain pasta with marinara or primavera sauce, which is one of the things that you serve in your cafeterias, Ron. But if I was a kid, I don't think I could make it through the rest of the day if all I had for lunch was hummus with pita.
Well, you know, we offered hummus last week for the first time on our menus in these 11 schools, and quite honestly...
That's an appetizer to me.
Well, we serve it with whole grain pita bread and some sliced tomatoes, cucumbers, and some vegetables on the side. And we had absolutely fabulous results where cafeteria staffs were making hummus to order because they were selling so many portions of it.
Wow.
You know, one school with a population of about 400 students sold 170 portions of hummus for lunch, which we think is just a wonderful thing.
We've been hitting on the federal government a little bit on this program, but to their credit, as food prices have begun to rise around the country, the federal government is making changes to the lunch program by earmarking increasing funding for fruits and vegetables and by expanding their commodity program to include more whole grains. Is that happening because of pressure from groups like yours, Susan?
Yeah, I think it's happening from groups. I think it's happening probably more so because parents and the kids in these schools are speaking out. And really, schools oftentimes don't really care what a dietitian in Washington, D.C. has to say about their program, but they do care what students want, and they care what parents want, and I think that's where the real change happens.
I want to remind people that you can go and look at our WFAEats.org food blog and take a look at what was being served in one school yesterday, and there are photographs on there and a whole story about it. Tell me about the school lunch report card that your group issues every year. Is every school or school system in the country given one?
No, we look at some of the largest school districts in the country, and then we try to get in touch with them, because you can't necessarily tell everything about the school lunch program just by looking online, and we want to give them an opportunity to weigh in on maybe some things they're doing behind the scenes, like a garden program or some kind of incentive program for schools. So that's how we decide who we want in and then who decides to opt in.
And CMS has opted in for quite a while, evidently.
Yeah, and they improved quite a bit. And mind you, our school lunch report card criteria are pretty much not necessarily above and beyond, like our golden carrot winners, for example. That is a completely different bar, a very high bar that we set. It's a high bar that parents would probably actually set for their kids, or anyone who looks at your website and says, good grief, is that really qualify as a school lunch? It looks disgusting. So that's our bar and probably most people's bars. But the school lunch report card is more about our schools complying with federal regulations and just kind of meeting a minimum, just trying at all to see that kids are choosing healthier foods, whether it's they even have the option, and then are there incentive programs to help them choose those healthier options.
Again, we invited folks from CMS to join us, and they were unable to do so today. CMS, through Child Nutrition Services, they're the cafeteria branch, I guess, of the – is it separate, do you know, Ron? Are they separate – are they part of the school system, or are they hired as an outside concern?
No, I believe they're part of the system, and I really can't answer that with any authority.
Okay.
But, you know, one thing that I think is an opportunity right now to let the listeners understand that in any school district, the school food service department is a self-funded operation. We've got a $30-plus million year budget, but we start every year with zero. We don't start at $36 million and take money away. We start at zero, and our own revenue is how we survive. So when you start doing things like changing menus drastically, and you brought up pizza as an example, pizza is a kid favorite.
Yeah.
You know, if we start taking pizza off the menu and our meal counts drop, then, you know, we're in a conundrum there.
Well, how have you done it?
Well, we took pizza off these 11 school menus, and we have worked it back in, but we're using something with a 63% whole grain crust. It's supplemented with soy in the crust, so we could cut the cheese back. We use a low-fat, low-sodium cheese and come up with a product that is a pretty darn good product.
Okay.
So, you know, there's a lot of pressure on school food service departments to at least break even. And, you know, we are self-funded.
CMS serves up 30,000 breakfasts and 80,000 lunches every day, with the mission, they say, to provide affordable meals that are nutritious, appealing, and served by caring professionals in a pleasant environment. That's their words. If I could only speak, I'd be dangerous. New items are student-tested, they say. I mean, students get to test these things and say yay or nay, or thumbs up, thumbs down. They added vegetarian entrees in 2002, and that same year, fryers were removed from elementary schools. In 2003, 10% fruit juice was eliminated, followed by whole milk the following year. In 2004, French fries were taken off the menu and offered a la carte only in secondary schools. In 2006, fryers were removed from middle schools, as well as delivered pizza. They had pizza delivered? Donuts and sweets were removed from the breakfast menu. It sounds like they're doing it kind of the way you did it. They're moving up the chain, beginning with the elementary schools, getting kids accustomed to different kinds of foods, and then moving it up the line to the middle schools and the high schools.
Yeah, I'd say that sounds pretty accurate, and I think those accomplishments are terrific.
However, I have in my hand, a la Rush Limbaugh, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School's K-8 menu for the month of March. I'd like to get some reactions, Susan, from you on this menu. Thursday, March 1st, Carolina dog, chili, broccoli, and cheese. March 2nd, macaroni and cheese with grilled chicken Caesar salad. That sounds pretty good. Cheese pizza and pepperoni pizza on Monday, March 5th. Then on Tuesday, barbecue on a bun with California mixed vegetables and sweet potato wedges. Nachos with beef and cheese sauce on Thursday. Southwest quesadilla on Friday. The following the following three Mondays, there were always cheese and pepperoni pizzas on the menu. On Wednesday, March 14th, stuffed cheese sticks with marinara sauce. And there are several other options here. I'm just picking up the ones that don't look terribly healthy. But there are things that are healthy, like spinach, turkey and gravy over rice. That's probably pretty good for you. Roasted squash and onions. All that sounds pretty good. Is this a good balance in your mind, Susan?
No. this is not what I would recommend anybody eat. And I certainly wouldn't...
Well,
say it's okay for kids.
In 2006, 7, and 8, CMS received a 92 or an A- on the report card that your organization gives. That's up from a C, I think, in 2005. Their current score, however, I understand, is 74, which is a C. What happened? Why would that happen, and why would they, having achieved the A ranking, be serving these foods?
Well, the first two scores, the A ranking that you mentioned was the school report card. So that's that lower bar that we grade on. The last one, the 74, were if we were going to consider them for a Golden Carrot Award. And that's, again, that higher bar. So they're completely different types of gradings. But not to get bogged down in our grading systems, just looking at the menu, you see a common theme here of cheese this, cheese that, and they're getting credit, quote unquote, for vegetarian options that are just basically cheese breads. And we don't think that's a healthy option for kids. And cheese is the number one source of saturated fat in any American's diet. And it's too much. It's loaded with fat, cholesterol, sodium, and there's no fiber in it. We rely too much on that. But secondly, they do at least have some good side items, which I will point out and like, oh, that's good. They have black-eyed peas. They have the sweet potato wedges that you mentioned.
Well, they're also offering fresh pears and fresh grapes and raisins and fresh apples as, I guess, dessert items.
And that's great. But again, what you find once you get, if you wait for the kid to come to the finish line, you have a picture of what you have on your website, which is this tray with ice cream and chicken nuggets. And that is not a healthy lunch. And these kids, even if there is a healthful option on the menu, they have to be incentivized. They have to be encouraged to take them. They have to have the staff that Chef Ron mentioned that is invested and cares and will speak to the kids and try to encourage them to pick the healthier option.
And yet CMS says that Child Nutrition Services, their school lunch division, is recognized throughout the state as a leader in efforts to improve the nutritional value of the meals they serve and were represented on the committee to write the standards for the entire state. Should we be pleased or concerned about that?
Well, you know, there's a big difference between effort and results. And I would like to see more results. And again, I sympathize with school districts, no matter where they are or who they are or what their menu looks like. They are operating within a system that is incredibly complicated and stacked against them. So when they can do, it's kind of like, gosh, if you can do anything, that's pretty good. But you know what? That's not good enough when you're talking about the health of kids. And I expect, because I see it happening, in Greenville, I see it happening with Chef Ron and his staff. I know this can work. I know these schools can do better, and I want to see it. And I'm tired of just saying, oh, that's pretty good. You have a whole grain underneath your pizza. It's like, no, you need to do better.
Let me share some listener comments that have been coming in on email and Facebook, and we'll take some phone calls too. Jay says, why don't your guests answer the basic question, why offer such unhealthy choices? We have tried to have desserts taken off the lunch menu at our school multiple times. We've been told by the cafeteria manager that he has to offer dessert every day or he would remove it. Why? Don't put the burden on parents to be the bad guys when we don't allow our kids to get the desserts. Taking kids to the garden is great, but these are kids. They will eat junk if you let them. You're on the front lines. Why not just take it off the menu?
Well, you know, first of all, when you look at the budget that school districts have to prepare lunch, and you know, a good figure we can use is basically, you know, you've got a dollar. You know, to buy food to put on a kid's tray. And when you think about what your options are with a dollar, it does dwindle. You know, I'm not sure where this comment is coming from, but, you know, the 11 schools that we're piloting at right now, we offer dessert every day. It just happens to be a fruit.
Okay.
We can offer dessert. It can be fruit.
Lee writes, please do not let your guests perpetuate this. The problem is insulin, which is released in massive quantities by processed carbs, grains, junk food, animal products, including fats from grass-fed animals, are good for people. Supply the fats every single cell in our body, especially our brains and nerves, need. The Inuits, Maasai, and American Indians were not riddled with diabetes and coronary artery disease when they ate their traditional diets. For the Inuits, virtually all animal diet. Fat is not bad, he writes. Fat satiates, keeps people from being hungry. New studies showing low-carb, high-fat diets can resolve type 2 diabetes. Get rid of pop, chips, and grains.
I'm gonna defer to Susan.
You're the dietitian, Susan.
Yes. Yeah.
To say that those populations that eat a lot of animal fats don't have heart disease, I don't think that's true, and I don't even think they have a very long life expectancy either. They don't have much choice, though, but we do have a choice, and the science is overwhelming that plant-based diets, which mostly are carbs, fruits, vegetables, beans, and grains are going to have a lot of carbs in them, are very healthful, and if you get the fat out of your cells, the insulin is able to do its job better. So don't get rid of the healthy carbs. Yeah, I'm not a proponent of soda and chips and refined sugar, but to say get rid of carbohydrates and grains is the opposite of what we need to be doing.
I was going to take a couple of calls. We don't have time. We only have about 30 seconds left. We haven't talked about beverages. Milk or chocolate milk has been a staple of school lunches since the beginning, it seems to me. Is milk still the primary beverage?
Yes.
Yes.
It's required.
Should it be?
No.
What about juices and soft drinks? Are they being served in schools?
Soft drinks, no. Juices, yes.
What about sweet tea?
No.
Is water
available? To staff. But we don't serve sweet tea to students.
Is water available?
Yes.
Should milk be taken off the diet?
No.
Because?
I'm not a dietitian. However, our dietitian who works for the district is very emphatic that we need to provide those kids with the vitamin D and calcium that milk provides, and it's a nutrient-rich product.
Again, Ron Jones, I want to thank you for driving up here from Greenville today. He's the culinary specialist and executive chef for the Greenville County, South Carolina Schools, and an award-winning chef at that with the Healthy Vegetarian Diet, or Foods Choices on the Line there in Greenville. Susan Levin is a registered dietitian and director of nutrition education at Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Thanks for joining us all.